Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
Just move on up toward your destination. Though you may find from time to time complication.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. He's Jim DeRogatis. And that's a little bit of the song Move On Up by the legendary Curtis Mayfield. This week, we'll be taking a closer look at the musical movement for which he was a key figure, Chicago Soul.
Absolutely, Greg. In addition to being exciting and fun music to listen to, these songs tell the story of political and cultural change in Chicago from the 1960s through the 1980s. Its lasting impact can still be felt today through artists such as Common and Kanye West, Chance the Rapper, No Name, and many others.
The Chicago Soul movement began brewing in the late 50s, right around the same time as legendary institutions like Motown in Detroit and Stax Records in Memphis. But what made Chicago Soul different from the other scenes was the diversity of its sound. Sonically, artists incorporated the gospel influence of the South, but added lush orchestral arrangements. Vocally, there were singers who had a more traditional baritone voice, but also those that sung in a higher register, leading some to label the movement as soft soul.
One group in particular played with both vocal styles, The Impressions, led by Jerry Butler, who had the deeper voice, and the great Curtis Mayfield, who sang in that higher register. The Impressions are often considered the beginning of Chicago soul, with their 1958 debut hit, For Your Precious Love. But other acts were important too, including Rotary Connection, featuring Minnie Riperton, The Dells, and Terry Collier.
And let's not forget the major institutions that helped this scene come together, the record labels and radio stations. Unlike Motown and Stax, which were single-label in-house operations, Chicago had several different recording entities. Some of these included the legendary Chess Records, VJ, and Curtis Mayfield's own Kurtom. And that's leaving out quite a few players. Plus, you had WVON, the black radio station in the city, really helping this music rise to prominence and connect with black audiences.
Now we're going to discuss some of the different artists and groups key to this movement in more detail. Let's welcome our guest, author of the book Move On Up, Chicago Soul Music and Black Cultural Power, Aaron Cohen. Aaron, welcome back to Sound Opinions.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to listen to your show, and it's a double pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. So there's media here, there's community here, and the music is part and parcel of it all. We're going to look at a couple of artists from the book, one by one. Greg and I have been talking for some time about doing a classic album dissection of a Curtis Mayfield disc, and we're going to do that. But he is the man, the genius, the legend on the cover of Move On Up, your book. Talk about Curtis's iterations.
Well, there were so many different iterations, and he started out as a very young man in music. I start the book when his group, The Impressions, were walking down Record Row, and he was a teenager.
My heart is open to you, and I will always be true, so and no one above me, please let me know.
And it was only, you know, a couple of years later when Curtis Mayfield emerged as a songwriter and started writing these classic songs. He was a young man in his early 20s when he was writing People Get Ready, which was one of the great civil rights anthems.
People get ready, there's a train a coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the dealers humming. Don't need just thank the Lord.
He had this very individualistic way of tuning his guitar, the F sharp. He also was very much ahead of his time in terms of controlling his own music, his own publishing, him and his business partner and manager, Eddie Thomas, and they set up Kurt Tom Records. He would also be a mentor and leader to other artists who were coming up, like the young Five Stair Steps. And then he goes solo and working in film and doing these scores for Superfly being the most famous one, but so many others.
Oh, Superfly, you're gonna make your fortune by and by. But if you lose, don't ask no questions why. The only game you know is do or die.
So there's all these different ways that he was getting involved in music and excelling at such a high level from a very young age. It's just incredible he was able to do all this and that Chicago provided him the space to do it.
How was this young man who grew up in the projects at Cabrini Green able to translate his understanding of the world into these extremely poetic songs? Was there something in the water here in Chicago, Aaron, or was it just Curtis was an exceptional human being? I mean, what do you attribute that to, that his songwriting acumen was so sharp and so young?
Well, along with his own talents, along with his own way of just sort of, you know, taking the guitar, tuning it to the dark keys on the piano, and doing a lot of reading, people like Paul Laurence Dunbar. But I think what also should be stated is that there was a collective effort in what he did. He worked very closely with Johnny Pate. And, you know, Johnny Pate was able to hear what Curtis Mayfield was doing and was able to transpose in these different keys because Johnny Pate was a great bassist, great composer.
You know we are two of a kind. A sad, sad girl and boy. And I feel like crying.
You know he feels like
because I have no one to
love. He worked these lengthy jazz jam sessions where you had to learn how to transpose and how to respond very quickly. So Curtis Mayfield was able to work with people like him and then another great guitarist, Phil Upchurch, who played on those records. And so having people like that around him, being surrounded by this great community, helped Curtis Mayfield become Curtis Mayfield.
Let's stay with Mayfield's extended family for the next artist we're going to talk about, Aaron. Jerry Butler, what a fascinating character in so many ways. Tell us about Jerry Butler.
Well, Jerry Butler started out, he grew up in Cabrini Green, as did Curtis Mayfield, but Jerry Butler personified that interconnection between music and politics. You know, after he left music, he ran a beer distributorship for a while and then became a Cook County commissioner, which was a political job that he had for decades up until his retirement very recently. But Jerry Butler as a singer was very fascinating too. He had this wonderful, wonderful voice.
So tell him,
never gonna give you up.
Whisper in his ear,
no matter how you treat me.
You tell him that Jerry said he'll never let you go.
So
what you doing to the man?
And he and after Jerry Butler left the Impressions, after Curtis Mayfield left the Impressions, they still collaborated and Curtis Mayfield still wrote for Jerry Butler. But Jerry Butler also had this collective ideal. And in the latter 60s, early 70s, he started a songwriter's workshop. So initially, the songwriter's workshop was for him to come up with more compositions for his own recordings, but it grew into something very different. It grew into a way for upstart Chicago-based songwriters to not only create music for other artists, but to also learn about publishing, to receive a salary while they were writing. And so many great songwriters came out of that. Chuck Jackson, for instance, Marvin Yancey, who they later went on to work with Natalie Cole, and Terry Collier was able to write and compose with Larry Wade so many great songs for the Dells, as well as Terry Collier's own records. And Jerry Butler was part and parcel of that. So Jerry Butler was always a leader. He also recorded some other really interesting concepts albums in the early 70s that deserve more credit. So he, as a singer, as a collaborator, as a leader, as an organizer of songwriters, and then later as a elected official, did a lot of great work for Cook County as part of the Cook County Board. And he helped organize a lot of musicians into this political direction, into holding elected office. And again, to talk about the diversity in Chicago, there was such a diversity in activism that Jerry Butler represented the epitome of going after elected office and holding elective office.
We're talking with Aaron Cohen, the author of Move On Up, A History of Chicago Soul Music. Aaron, you dig deep into the first song that really put the impressions on the map, Jerry Butler and Curtis Mayfield and their friends. It was basically a neighborhood doo-wop group, For Your Precious Love. When with Butler on lead vocals, well, he was still a teenager, and I swear, you listen to that record and he sounds like he's probably 35, 40 years old, you think, you know, with that baritone voice. But what was it about that song? It was such a signature song for them, but also a signpost song for that transition from doo-wop into soul, I think.
Jerry Butler's maturity, his mature sounding voice, was certainly a big part of it. The harmonies, and that it's such a sparse song too. The way they use so much empty space in that room, recording it at Universal, the great studio. And darling, they say that our love won't grow, but I just want to tell them that they don't know. The way the voices play off of that sense of open and empty space is so beautiful and such a departure from what came before and set the stage for what came later. And it's such a beautifully written tune in terms of its yearning, in terms of its tone, in terms of all of the sort of emotions that flow through it in such a way that there's this mystery about it as well, which I think is also so important to classic soul music.
That was the launching point, and it really kind of broke the group up too, didn't it? The impressions.
Well, yeah. See, of course, that story is that unbeknownst to the group, it became Jerry Butler and the Impressions. Needless to say, the other Impressions were not happy about that. VJ mm-hmm. Records thought that they could do better presenting Jerry Butler as the star of the group. And that did lead to some uncomfortable situations for sure.
But they ended up having both stellar careers. The Impressions went on to dominate the 60s with their civil rights anthems, with Mayfield writing the bulk of their songs, and Butler went on to have an incredibly successful solo career. So it worked out, I guess, right?
It worked out for all of them. And I think it's a testament to the talents of Jerry Butler, Curtis Mayfield, and then the other people in the Impressions too, Sam Gooden and Fred Cash, that they were all able to convene on their own terms, do their own thing, create their own music, and it was very, very good indeed.
In the background, as this music is being made, you know, Chicago as a center of Black cultural awakening and Black political movements, I just find it fascinating, Aaron, that you have the Black Panthers, you know, hardcore community activists, you have the Nation of Islam, and you have the kind of the Baptist power structure represented by Operation Push and Jesse Jackson. Like those three wings of Black political power don't agree about anything, but they all come together to listen to the Impressions.
Well, yes, I do want to mention that Elijah Muhammad did have a very strong role in what was happening here culturally. Phil Caron, who set up the Afro Arts Theater, which I talked about in my book, was an early follower of Elijah Muhammad. Syl Johnson, who recorded Is It Because I'm Black, went on great length to me when I interviewed him over several hours about Elijah Muhammad's influence in terms of self-ownership, in terms of controlling his own company, controlling one's own destiny. So Martin Luther King, of course, had a huge impact, and his message, his role, and the way people in the city responded to Martin Luther King when he moved here in the 1960s, and the way young people responded. And that, of course, comes out in the music. And then the corporate model of Operation Push in the early 70s, very connected to music, very connected to music production. And so, yes, there were these different strains as well. And Chaka Khan was an early follower of Fred Hampton and the Black Panthers. The Black Panthers had a very strong appeal to young people like Chaka Khan at that time, as well as some older musicians like Tyrone Davis also was a follower of Fred Hampton and the Black Panthers. So, yes, there were these different paths that political and civil rights groups, post-civil rights groups, Black Power groups, all had towards their agenda, and music was also very much a part of all of that.
When we return, more on Chicago Soul. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed nationally by PRX.
Ooh, child.